Oh, you mean that he knew in advance, or you just, you're assuming just how things work, that he knew that much?
Well, I knew that he had to know. It's just part of management. He knew, he had went to a meeting in High Point 3 months before, and that's when they told him. He told me later that he knew a good 3 months, but he couldn't say nothing. And it's, that was part of it. You know, I don't know. Completely, how long had they announced it to him before, but I knew it had been over 3 months and they had talked about it, because things had started coming together. And the one bad thing about it was we were making money, good money for a furniture company.
How do you know that? How did you know that?
We had to go over the monthly statement and be accountable for everything that went to our departments. And went over it with us whether we made money or lost money, because we had an incentive plan for the supervisors. So we got a monthly statement showing what we'd either made, lost for the whole place. You know, if we made good, we got a bonus. I got a bonus once in 3 years. But we made money. We had to do like 10% above what was expected to get that bonus. The first year I was there, I got like a $3,000 bonus for a yearly bonus plus a raise. Been there a year and got a check for $3,300 is bonus. From what? Mm-hmm. You don't give that kind of a bonus losing money. Not at all. The daily routine was we had to know how much production went out the door, which was X dollars, and you knew basically what the payroll was. You knew what the overhead was. We went over that in meetings. We knew what it actually cost us to make it. It wasn't, you know, something they tried to hide from us. They did keep us informed dollar wise where we were at the whole time I was there. You know, that's how you know you gauge your work, is you're making money and shipping product, you know what you're making. We knew every day how many thousands of dollars we shipped out the door. That was part of the morning meeting.
Why do you reckon the decision was made to close a plant that's making money?
You want the truth, or you want a bunch of bull?
I want to know what you really think happened. And I want to know after that what the bull is that someone would say. Start with the truth and then the bull.
The truth was that place was bought to be sold. Mm-hmm. When they bought White, Olive White, which was both plants, there was enough material, stock, and our piece parts to make material to ship. That they paid for the plant with what was in it. In both plants. And you stop and look at the length of time they had run, and it was only like 4 years. They made money on the sale of the machinery. They made money on the sale of the land down in Hillsboro. They'll make money on the sale of the land up at Mabin. Somebody will buy it, and they will pay big money for a lot that big inside the city limits. It was a money-making proposition from the start. They've seen how much was in there, what the property value was, what they could get out of it. What they did, really, I don't think they expected it to make money. I think the first couple of years, basically, it was a tax write-off, or was supposed to be, but it didn't happen that way. You can actually make money by losing money. And you take a $60-plus million corporation, which is what Hickory Manufacturing, White Together was, you can afford to write off $1, $2, $3, $4, $5 million a year on your taxes and make money by doing it, because the depreciation, 5 years. Mm-hmm. They got everything they could bleed out of that thing in depreciation from the time they bought it till the time they shut the door. 1994 would have been, well, 93 actually, because they bought it 5 years prior. Mm-hmm. Was the last year they could depreciate the value on the property, the land, the machinery.
Is that a standard depreciation schedule on industrial?
That's 5 years, yeah. You can, it's what they call an accelerated depreciation. You can depreciate it over 5 years. Most companies do that. Then they turn right back around and buy a new piece of equipment and start all over again, or property or whatever. But it's an accelerated depreciation. You have to know a little bit about accounting to know about that. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't. But they seen what they had. They knew that they could write that depreciation off 20% per year for total value. I mean, for total purchase price, 20% per year if they paid $5 million for it. You're talking $1 million a year just write off. If they make money on top of that, that's the write off plus the money. So there's no way the man could have lost. No way. Mm-hmm. When the depreciation stopped, he could have lost. But the plant was shut down when it actually stopped.
Why sell it if it's making money?
He was making more money by losing money. The depreciation, 20% of, let's say, White was $13 million a year, $13 to $14 million, the first 3 or 4 years. Okay, you take 20% of that was profit. That's $2.5 million. Another $1 million on top of that, for depreciation, you made $3.5 million. Okay, now you come to the end of the 5 years, you're only going to get $2.5 million. You can take and invest what money you got in that in another place, get to 20% and make that $1 million. Right on and on and on and on. Plus, you got to sell the machinery, they strip the wire and everything out of that building, it's over. Everything. So they got their money back from the land. And when they sell it, I don't even know if they sold it yet or not, but when they sell it, they get their money back from the land, which is right back into the pot. The expenditure, main expenditure is gone. Expenditure for the machinery, they got it for nothing almost, what was in that plant, because it was shut down, it wasn't running. Total cash outlay, they probably paid $5.5 million for the whole thing and made 20. That's the part that you have to understand a little bit about accounting to do.
What did they sell the property for in Hillsboro?
Actual cash, I don't. Mm-hmm. I know it wasn't near what they thought they was going to get out of it.
I've heard a lot of stories about the value of the inventory when they purchased the plant as well. Do you have any sense of what the value of the inventory might have been?
It was
at the time of purchase based on what it was when you went there.
They had a warehouse full. They had enough parts in the inside the plant, already machined, sitting there, to make several $1 million worth of furniture. I mean, they had the wood yard was full of mahogany and cherry, oak, whatever they were making at the time. It was full. The plant was full. They had enough stuff in there to run 3 months for nothing. I mean, nothing. And that's from the people that I worked with that worked there for years, supervisors, hourly employees, every one of them told me, said everything in here was, all they had to do was walk in the door and start it up. The inventory was there. The warehouse was there. It was full. It wasn't empty. It wasn't depleted. I'm saying close. With everything completely totaled up, like you're looking at $5 million, their purchase price was there.
You're talking about assembled furniture, piece parts,
raw lumber, not counting the machinery and all that stuff. They got the money the day they bought the plant, mm-hmm. which is plus 20% depreciation for the first year. The day they bought that plant, they made money by just buying it. It's smart business moves. A very smart business move.
Given our time frame here, where we're headed with your family here, I want to sort of talk a little bit more about the closing and that final time with you. And I hope that next trip to Mevin, we can have a visit, maybe catch up and fill in some of the blanks. We haven't talked at all about sort of your early work in the factory and your relationship with the workers there and your relationship with other managers and all that. And I'd really like to spend some time on that.
Okay.
And I think since we've been talking about the closing, I sort of want to move back to that, and then we'll work towards completion today, this interview done, and we'll pick it up next time.
Okay.
Why don't you tell me when and how you heard for the first time that the factory was going to close?
It's 10 o'clock in the morning. They called every supervisor, manager, into that conference room. Randy Austin came in, Robin Hart came in, and two or three others from corporate came in. They locked the doors, shut everything off, and he told us then that the plant was closing, that we would be given 2 months severance pay if we stayed till closing, that some of us would be offered other jobs at Hickory, and that it would be effective 60 days from that day. That people would start leaving. So the supervisors wouldn't leave then, but the people would start leaving in 60 days, or as they feathered out, the parts feathered out through the plant and run down. But that's the way I heard it. And 30 minutes later, they were told us to go get our employees, take them to the warehouse, and they dressed them the same way.
Who did the talking in this meeting? Was it Robin or Randy?
Randy Austin, completely.
Was the response?
Shock, basically, by everybody, including me. Jim Murray had known about it. The paperwork that they had to hand out had to be ready, so he had to be told in advance of us being told. And Robin, and basically that's the only two, other than Randy Austin and everybody at corporate and you.
Do you remember anything that was said, or was there any protest or anything like that?
There's nobody.
Questions or, you know?
No, nobody asked a question. Why? Truthfully, nobody asked one. It was more or less a state of shock. You know, and then we didn't have time really to react before we had to go back and start taking people to the warehouse, and everybody knew. By the time I got back out to my apartment and...
Tell us about that.
That was a weird feeling. You're in shock yourself, and then you know what's going to do to everybody that works for you, and you know the day's completely gone. Literally, nobody, not even me, wanted to do anything. But you go out there and you know for like 30 minutes, and it's like somebody taking an anvil and setting it on top of your head and just pressing down on it. Not the anvil's not enough, but pressing on it. And you can't, you know, you can anticipate a lot of things, but you can't anticipate how a person that's 60 years old is going to react. You don't know if somebody's going to have a heart attack or die, which that kind of shock will do it.
Did you say anything to the employees other than, what did you say to them?
I told them we had a meeting in the warehouse, because truthfully, I didn't want to tell them anymore. Mm-hmm. That news I didn't like, and it, you know, some of them asked me what was bad, and I said, you just have to wait and find out.
And what, did you stay in the department for that 30 minutes?
Yeah. I stayed in there and thought, you know, you think about yourself, what you're going to do, and your mind kind of goes wild. You know, your first and foremost thought is what's going to happen to me. That's just basically being human. But when you know that everybody out there is going to be told, you kind of, I don't know, just, you get a cold feeling deep down in your soul. It just, you know what's going to happen, and you know that you don't want it to happen. And you know everybody's going to be told, and everybody's going to go, and their face is going to drop, and they're going to wonder and think the same things that I did. What am I going to do next? How am I going to support myself? Where am I going to live? Mm-hmm. How am I going to buy food? And basic necessities, I guess, come to mind first.
Did you call anyone during that period? Call home or anything like that?
No.
So then the meeting 30 minutes later, tell us about that and what happened there.
Okay, Randy got everybody in the warehouse, and we were talking. And they all come in, and he announced it. And when he announced it, it just was not any remorse in his voice, not to us or not to the employees. It was more to me like an act. I think he knew the day he was hired that that was part of his job, and he had prepared for it, and he prepared for it well. I looked at his face. And I watched his movements for that whole 30 minutes because I wanted to see how he reacted. And I looked for signs of weakness. I mean, you can see it. You can see when you're genuine and somebody's really hurting to do something. I didn't feel it. I didn't see it. You know, it may have been there, but I didn't feel it and I didn't see it. And I looked for it. I hunted for it, as a matter of fact. And I turned around and I kind of thought how I would have acted had to do the same thing. And it would have killed me. I could have done it, but I couldn't have left that stage without tears in my eyes. There's no way. And a man that cares about the people that works for him, not even, you know, no longer than he'd been there, about people in general, he couldn't have done it. You know, I didn't buy his act, basically, is what it boils down to.
Did anyone else speak publicly?
Robin said a few words about, you know, us passing out papers, and the paperwork Tiger was following, more or less. Everybody would be talked to. Everybody would be canceled. They talked about going to a tech school down there and training, and they went into just a few minor details, but that was basically Jim Murray and Robin. It wasn't Randy Austin. It was just people that they knew, and then I don't think anybody really listened. Including me.
Do you remember how you were standing or sitting next to during that meeting?
Standing next to Tawny Lane.
And were you all talking during this?
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, we were. It was, we went out there and she looked at me and she said, "What is wrong?" And I said, "You'll find out." And she started to say something else and she said, "You gonna tell me?" And I said, "No." I said, "You'll find out." And it was her and a couple of people that worked for me asked me, saying, what's it about? What's going on? You know, the whole yeah, before the meeting ever started or before Randy got out there. But she sensed that she knew something was coming that wasn't good by just looking at me or talking to me. And I didn't say a word to her about what it was. And, I don't know, she's one of them people that just got feelings about other people and can sense when things are wrong, and she knew it was coming.
Who was it? I didn't hear the name of the person you said you were.
Tawny Lane. Big mouth working rough. You know, mm-hmm. You have to tell her that, I'll keep.
Oh, okay.
Where did she work?
She worked on the glue press.
Yeah, I call her by a different last name.
Gifford,
yeah.
Well, her real name before she married was Lane. And then she married Dennis Guilford. Mm-hmm. But I was talking to her.
Mm-hmm. But how about during, after the word was out and it had been announced and everyone knew and was in shock, were people saying stuff?
They were mad. They were really mad. And it wasn't just one or two. It was just basically everybody. They were doing what a person does when they fear something. They were striking out. Mm-hmm. And it's just like I did. They felt a betrayal, and they felt I don't think, you know, you can, it's like what Abraham Lincoln said, you can't fool all the people all the time. Those people in that plant, when they got the message, they looked for the same thing I did. Only I had anticipated, or had prior knowledge, and I looked for it. They didn't see the caring or the hurt or nothing in Randy Austin's eyes, me, didn't they? And I think they looked for it. And, you know, the biggest thing was, how could they do this? And that's what everybody was saying. Or why did they do this? Or what am I going to do? That's,
What time of day did this meeting take place?
About 11 o'clock, 11:30, right before dinner. To tell you the truth, I didn't know how many people had come back and dinner.
That's what I was going to ask you about. What happened at dinner? What did people do?
Talked.
What did you do? Do you remember?
Went upstairs and sat down. Didn't eat. Didn't do nothing. Just thought. It took me by surprise, too. It's just, I want to compare this with something. And it's not a good comparison. But it's basically, I felt the same way both times. I was in a room when my dad died, and I didn't realize it. I seen the monitors go straight line. I had enough sense to know that he was dead. And I walked back to the room where my wife was at. And it took the doctor coming and saying it for me to realize it. And the plant closing was the same thing. We knew it was happening. But until somebody said this is the final blow, You didn't really want to accept it. It was out there, and you knew it, and it was lurking, but you didn't want to accept it because you always had that little glimmer of faith, or maybe they'll change, or maybe somebody will buy it, or, you know, there's always that little glimmer of hope in the distance. But to me, it hit me the same way. It was a death. It was the death of a family of people, of a company. That's what I thought about at dinner. And it was permanent. You knew what was coming was going to be final, and 99% sure. And you couldn't really understand why the people did, and I didn't. Because I seen more of the money statements than they did. That's what made it even harder, I guess, for me to understand than it was them. You know, they'd seen the layoffs come from 400 down to 300 down to 200 or whatever it was when we shut down. But you would have think you would have walked through a funeral home that morning, or were in a funeral home. It's the same feeling, the same cold. The only difference is there's usually more warmth at a funeral home because people are hugging each other and trying to be a little supportive, and you just sit back and realize, you know, imagine a guy working 40 years in one place and then going into work one morning and saying the plant burnt down. You can accept that because there's nothing there to go back to. But when you go in and you say, we're shutting the doors, the building's going to be here and everything else is going to be here, but you're not going to have a job. The plant burning down is a whole lot easier to accept because you have nothing physical to look at, nothing physical to go to. And you know right then and there that there's no hope, there's no nothing. You got to go somewhere else to go to work. Well, both those situations I went through, and believe me, the plant burning down was easier. That's no joke. It was easier on me.
What percentage of the crew in the sanding room came back after lunch?
Every one of them. Every last one of them. And that, they didn't want to do much, but they wanted to get questions answered. And I think that's the biggest reason they came back. And I didn't blame them. You know, I didn't want to do much either. I had to stop and think, and, you know, trying to make work go on in the state of mind I was in, the state of mind they were in, was just foolish. Even having worked the rest of that day was foolish, but I guess it gave the people something to kind of take their mind off of it and maybe look for tomorrow, rather than just saying go home and come back in the morning. But you know, if production-wise, the day was gone.
As the supervisor in that department, they must have come to you for answers.
They did.
What was that like?
I didn't have them. I said, well, I'll have to find out, and then I'll have to let you know, because I didn't have the answers then. Nobody other than Robin and Randy Austin had the details worked out, and it was, you know, days and days and coming with all the details for any of the questions. You know, we didn't even get our questions answered.
That's what I was going to ask you. Yes, when and how did you get your questions answered?
Basically the same time the employees did. When we went and asked, if somebody asked us something we didn't know or hadn't been already been told, we'd go and ask, and that's the way we found out. Mm-hmm. There was no, you know, there were meetings telling you about this opportunity and that opportunity, and they were letters saying there's going to be jobs here and jobs here and jobs here, but a lot of those just flat didn't work out for the people I've talked to, you know. They wanted people, but they only wanted this type of people and this type of people and this type of people. It wasn't. That part of it, I think, was not, well, you can't answer everybody's question. There's no physical way you can take 246 people, you're going to have 246 different questions. You can't anticipate it. Mm-hmm. And some of them we just had to wait till somebody else found out from somebody else and it come back down the line. But the biggest question was, if I stay here till you tell me I do no longer have a job, do I get that 2 weeks severance pay? That was the biggest question. They were worried more about dollars than they had to. Or will you give me a good reference? Or When can I start drawing unemployment before or after I get the severance pay? Questions like that. An employment security commission come out and they answer a lot of those questions. That was the type of questions that we couldn't answer, basically. And the insurance questions. Can I pay? You know, how long can I pay and how long does the co-rack go on? More of the self-essential needs. You know, your five basic needs, your money, your house, your food, clothes.
Who in your department were you closest to?
Coy. Coy would have made a hell of a good supervisor a long time ago. He knew more about that department than I did. He could run anything in there, do anything in there, and he was a good person.
And what did you tell? Did you inquire? Did you have any special conversations with the folks you were closest to, Coy or someone else?
Well, I had done. I'm gonna tell you, I'd done that every day, mm-hmm. And that's. We pretty much said, or asked. Coy in particular, I could talk to Coy and say anything I wanted to, whether I should have said it or not. You know, there's some things you're not supposed to say and some things you can't say, but it didn't make any difference with him, whatever I thought I said. And he was pretty much the same way. You have people that you relate to real well. Coy was one of those people, a lot of people related to him, not just me, but a lot of people. Coy was outgoing. Foolhardy, crazy fool sometimes, and as full of meanness as I am, which I guess is probably why we got along so good, because we'd sneak around and do stuff to each other, and have, you know, make a little fun out of a hard day's work, and you have to do that. And he was that kind of person. I loved him for it too.
This was just goes back. I had sort of a question about something you were talking about before. I have a sense of just what a shock this was for you to be called into the meeting where things, you know, the announcement was made about the plant closing, mm-hmm. and for the employees, and the sense of shock you all felt that day. But you also said something about sort of seeing it coming. But before you also talked about the fact they were making good money.
They were making money.
So, did you suspect it was going to happen, and if so, why? Since you know, you could see that they were actually making money.
Well, you have to have sometimes like a sixth sense. When they shut down Hillsboro, I knew the day they shut it down that Mebane would be right behind it. I knew it. That day. I felt it that day. You know, you don't. When they pulled everything back, they got everything under one roof. And that was a move that was made to Phyllis. I can't even say it now. To get everything ready for a good sale, more or less. One property, all the machines and everything, all the stock. Warehouse, all the manufacturing technology under one roof. But it's just a feeling I had that day when they announced it to the people at Hillsboro. And I was down there, and they went through that twice, and God, I feel sorry for them for that. But I knew it. I don't know why, but I did. It's just a feeling I had. It's not a good one either time. But I did expect, and it was a big shock to me, but I did expect it, because me and some of the other people had talked during the shutdown at Hillsboro, and I said, you know, I can understand why they're making the move. It's more cost effective to do it under one roof, but it's just the way they done it. I don't know, I just knew it, just a feeling. And I'm going to tell you something else that was said. It may never happen. God, I hope it don't for the people that work there. But I give it 3 years from the time they shut down White till they shut down Hickory Manufacturing and start selling it. You don't. The man that owns that company, or companies, does not care about the people that works for them. Does not care about their families. does not care whether they live or die. All he cares about is a dollar bill. He didn't see the people. As far as I know, he never toured the plant. I never met him. I never seen him. Robin Hart met him up in Chicago. He'd come to High Point a couple of times, but he'd never come down there and seen the people that was actually in that plant. He never had to look at their faces. He never had to answer their questions. All he seen was a dollar bill going by. And he has been known for buying places and shutting them down. And a person can do that is a heartless son of a bitch. That's no joke. That's the one thing that should have happened. He should have had to walk through that place and look at those people going out. He will when he walks through the gates of hell. Because you don't go to heaven and do people that way. That's no joke.
What went through your mind for Robin Hart, for what he must have been going through at that time? What were you thinking about him, and what was ahead for him after this announcement had been made?
Robin had an opportunity to stay on as an advisor to Hickory Manufacturing for a pretty substantial cut in pay, but it was still a job, and he refused it. Robin made, I guess, Wyatt his last stand. And when he had done one of the jobs that he didn't want to do, and he felt it more at Wyatt than he did at Singer, because he had gone, he'd matured, he'd got to feeling people more as people. He'd changed a lot from the time I knew him at Silver. He'd mellowed out a whole lot. And how that he couldn't, I guess the way he's a lot like me, he just didn't want to go back and have to do it again. And that's why he retired. He could have stayed on it to Hickory Manufacturing for a year, probably another year and a half, and finally got full retirement. He just didn't do it. Didn't want to do it. Didn't have it in him to do it. I was offered a job at Hickory Manufacturing. I turned it down. Did not like the person that offered me the job, which he is no longer with Hickory Manufacturing. He was a plant manager. He's no longer there. Didn't trust it. Didn't trust them. Did not trust that company at all. Hickory's still running. They still got four companies besides Hickory. But I wasn't going to put any kind of part of me into a company that just said, hey, we're shutting doors on everybody here. We don't care. You know, it's just, I think that's basically the feeling here. Because basically they shut the door on him too. It wasn't just the people that worked there that was going. He was losing his job too. And he knew that. You know, that was why Robin left, and in my opinion, Robin didn't go up to Hickory. He lost his job too. He knew what that company had done to him. You know, making I know he made over $100,000 a year. I don't know how much more over that, but would you want to go somewhere else and work for a company that just done it? That's the question you have to ask yourself, and I did. And they offered me a job up there, and I laughed in their face. I told them, no way.
How much blame do you think Robin received for the closing?
By the people?
Yeah.
60-70%. All actuality, no. One man shut the doors on that plant. He's in Chicago, and he owns the insurance company. Mm-hmm. That's who shut the doors to that plant. Wasn't Randy Austin, truthfully. Wasn't nobody else. It's the guy that controlled the money that owned the place. He shut it down. And everybody else carries the blame on their shoulders. But in all actuality, it falls to one person, and one person alone, the man that owned it. The man that never did come and see anybody.
I have just one more question. We're going to wrap up. Sort of taking us through the sequence of that day.
Yeah.
Which was a real emotional day. I mean, I can feel it now going through it with
real
you.
Emotional drunk at night, too.
I was going to ask you, what did you do after closing that day?
Me?
Or even after everyone left, I know often you stayed later, you know, the supervisor would stay and spend some time in the office. Did you do that that day and then take us through the evening? What happened?
No, I left there. Went down to Papa Joe's. You know where Papa Joe's is at.
Where is Papa
Joe's? Down on the right past, you know where you cut back to go to the interstate below Melman, next road.
Is it called Nancy's now? Down
yeah,
the
I think,
road?
Yep. Yep, that's Papa. That's what used to be Papa Joe's. Mm-hmm. Coy's brother's one opened that place, by the way.
Now I know where to get a free beer.
Or Donnie. Mm-hmm. Donnie runs it now. I know Donnie, and you got to know him quite well while I was down there. But a bunch of us went down there and just sat and talked, drunk a couple of beers, and tried to figure out what we'd done.
Who was down there with you?
Donnie went down there. Larry. Harvey.
Larry Williams.
No, Larry Henderson. Oh. Harvey was down there. Mm-hmm. About all the supervisors were down there. Several hourly employees were down there. And I guess everybody had just this big disbelief. And they were trying to cope with what they just received. Mm-hmm. And of course, a couple of us didn't have to cope too much to go down there every day, you know. But our Dante and Ann Grill, if we done that, that was regimentation and we got
that's,
used
that's
to.
That's a different kind of coping.
Definitely. Stress relief. But just feeling being numb. Nowhere to go, nothing to do. Not really wanting to go anywhere or do anything. It's just, I don't know, it's just like somebody's took your head and pulled your brain out and you're just walking around with nothing up there. It's just total numbness. And you want to strike out, but you have nothing to strike out at. Nobody to strike out at. So you basically abuse yourself a little bit by drinking and trying to get some of the stress out by talking, listening. Try to get a little understanding for yourself as well as everybody around you. And the only people that understood are the people that's feeling the same pain that you do. The only person that could really help you and understand what you're going through is the same person that's sitting beside you that went through the same thing you did. And you didn't really want to stop and talk to them because you know they were hurting like you were. There was no understanding. There was no place to go to get understanding. Being laid off and being told plant shut down is two different feelings. Laid off hurt. But this was completely different. I was mad when I got laid off. I didn't get mad at the shutdown. I wasn't nobody get mad at. Nobody to really comprehend, I guess, what everybody was told that day. You know, the one thing I didn't have to do that a lot of them did is go on and tell them. Kids, wife, mom, dad. Hey, I don't have a job 2 months. And then, you know, we stop and you think, I knew just damn near everybody in there. I knew the families. You knew the wife and the kids. You met them at one place or another. Maybe it's a small town. You meet everybody. And you get introduced to everybody. And you could just, I don't know, the feeling was there. You know, I felt so bad for those people. Not as much for myself as for them. You know, you called. Probably the hardest thing that anybody's ever done in their life was to go home and tell their wife, hey, or kids, you know, I don't have a job in 2 months. How am I going to feed Jones? How am I going to pay the bills? They had more to worry than I did. And more of the shock and the pain.
Mm-hmm. Well, Don, I want to thank you very, very much for taking this time. I'd like to go on, but I think it's probably time to wrap up today.
Yeah, before my sister shoots me. Yeah.
They're entitled to it. But just let me say thank you. I would like to do part two sometime, maybe in Devon, here again.
Well, set a date and I'll try to be down there.
Okay.
You're welcome.